Hello, world. You're listening to the Kitchener-Waterloo Linux User Group audio podcast. KWLUG discusses topics related to free and open source software of all kinds. We meet on the first non-holiday Monday of each month in Kitchener, Ontario, Canada. This podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share-alike license, so you can give it to others, remix it, or even sell it, provided you abide by the terms of the license and share alike the works that you remix and redistribute. For more information about KWLUG, visit kwlug.org. For more information about this podcast, visit kwlug.org/podcasts. In this month's meeting, Jason Paul demonstrates TrueNAS Scale, and John Steele demonstrates Unraid. Unfortunately, we had some audio problems during the second presentation, and the audio quality got pretty bad.
Okay, I'll get started. So today we're going to talk about two of the software platforms for turning common computer hardware into a fully functional network-attached storage server. We're going to talk about TrueNAS Scale and Unraid. I'm going to talk about TrueNAS Scale, and I believe, John, you're talking about Unraid. It's not going to be quite a head-to-head. I've done a little bit of comparison work, but I'm mainly going to just go over the features. So just a quick bit about me. Been using Linux since 2001, living in the region since 2004. I got some articles on TrueNAS on my website there. I'll probably throw this up as well and some other resources, but I'll also make sure that the presentation is available if anyone wants. So first, I kind of want to just get a question and just to see how many of you already have some kind of network attached storage in your home. If you're using something, I would love to know kind of what you guys are using. I don't know what OMB is actually. Pi, Raspberry Pi, very nice. Open Media Vault, cool. Okay. What do we have in the room?
QNAP? Yes,
QNAP.
I know.
Okay. QNAP's good. Yeah, we got Unraid, giant Linux server. I've done that. rsync. Yeah, When I started, I ran just a bunch of USB hard drives attached to a Linux machine, a Linux server. Okay, we've got a lot of different ones. Synology, Asus Tor, QNAP. So we've got a lot of people that have some different solutions. Very nice to hear. Okay. So just to go over the basics, what is a NAS? A network attached storage is a server that is a file level computer data storage server, usually network connected to make the storage available for clients and servers. And you usually share the files using a network communication protocol like SMB, server message block, NFS, network file storage, and then FTP, Nextcloud running on RAID, very nice. Own cloud. Yeah. So we got lots of different options for sure. I think Nextcloud is just really good software that it runs on a lot of different things. So I'll get into that a little bit more. And that kind of feeds into this where you'll have a NAS, you'll have a server that shares your files, makes your files available, but it usually has a bit of computing power behind it where you can run some applications as well. You can host applications, run tasks. That wasn't always the case, but it's become more and more common and different brands have different ways of getting the applications on. And I'll be talking about that a bit as well. So why would you use a NAS? This is how we used to store our data way back in the day. I don't know how many of you had spindles of CDRs and DVDRs. And if you wanted the files, you had to go and hunt around for the right spindle and find it and put it in your DVD drive. Or maybe you use an external hard drive and you have to go and find that and plug it in and, you know, or you have to, you know, go dig out a USB key. You know, a big part of having a network attached server is for backups because a lot of hard drives, you know, you've got a laptop, you've got, you know, it's not a matter of if it'll fail, it's when. And having backups is always a good idea. And then the other main reason is to share the files. Making files available on your network, making files available to anybody. A lot of these servers have a lot of features that you can make, you know, files available, use them with different applications. The floppy disk sounds, loading USB flash drives. Yeah. Absolutely. I still have some of my old floppy disks. I still have to go through them. So one of the reasons I think these have become more popular is that hard drives were really expensive for the longest time. You know, spinning Rust drives, you know, in the, you know, I remember I started getting 160 gigabyte drives and putting those together. But the cost per gigabyte of drives has just dropped dramatically, you know, in the last 10, 15 years. But also the drive sizes have gone up. So, you know, 2 terabytes used to be a pretty good size. You know, now we're at, you know, 14 terabyte, 16 terabyte, 20 terabyte. They're huge. And so it's really accessible to get a lot of storage. There's a lot of different commercial offerings to use these. So you can go into a store and buy a Synology or buy a QNAP and just throw some Western Digital hard drives or Seagate Iron Wolfs in. Western Digital Red, Seagate Iron Wolfs are the typical NAS grade drives that are meant to be running 24/7. You know, you can throw pretty much any hard drives in some of these and they'll be fine. And for a commercial offering, there's a lot of, you know, HP and Dell and Lenovo make their own servers with, you know, enterprise grade drives. Shout out to, you know, 45 Drives who, you know, make some pretty crazy stuff. The Storinator, you know, when you want like, you know, 60 terabytes, 100 terabytes or more petabyte, they can make that happen. So what is TrueNAS? TrueNAS is sort of the alternative to some of these commercial offerings where it's a free, you know, to download, free to use, open source software. There's a couple different flavors of TrueNAS. It's built by IX Systems. All of their flavors are, you know, they use the ZFS file system. They have integrated applications. They've got block storage. And you can, the community editions you can deploy on pretty much anything. I'll get into this later, but the main two ones are FreeNAS is their original product. It was forked from the Monowall project in 2005. And they rebranded to TrueNAS Core in 2020, and it's based on FreeBSD. So this was the offering for the longest time. It supported, I think it's called Jails, was sort of their way of doing applications. But BSD has its own limitations. And then they announced the TrueNAS Scale project, and it was released and made generally available in 2022, which was based on Debian Linux. So that has support for a lot of different things. So it's got support for Docker. It has virtualization through KVM. You can do file sharing with SMB, Server Message Block, and NFS. And also iSCSI, if you want to do that. It supports containers. It runs a version of Kubernetes to do the applications. So it's a pretty fully featured product. It also supports backup to cloud using Cloud Sync. So you can sync it to AWS S3, Backblaze B2, Box, Dropbox, Google Cloud, Google Drive. You can do rsync and ZFS snapshots. So there's a lot of options for backing up your data as well offsite, so that, you know, if something ever happened to your actual server, you can be fine. You can also replicate with another local server if you want for high availability. And there are some options for clustering. That's a little bit interesting. I'll get to that later. So just a quick primer on ZFS. It's kind of hard not to talk about ZFS. So ZFS is an open source storage platform. I believe it was originally written by Sun Microsystems and acquired by Oracle. It was open sourced, very ahead of its time. It uses copy on write protection. So at the file system and disk management level. So this is basically to protect you that if you're in the middle of a write, it will write out a new version of the block that's been modified and update the metadata and then unlink the old block and link to the new block. So this prevents problems where you could be in the middle of a write and then you have a power loss and that could cause file system corruptions. This is something called the RAID write hole. This is why a lot of RAID controllers have a battery backup on them, is to make sure that if something is in the middle of being written and there's a power failure, you don't get your data corruption. Now, ZFS goes even further in protecting against data corruption by integrity checking using both data and metadata. It's constantly challenging the drives to make sure that the data is correct. And it also has data integrity verification and self-healing. There's a really good video that Wendell from Level One Text did that goes up on the basics of ZFS. So if you're curious, I definitely recommend checking that out because he goes in through this in way more detail than I do. The other thing that's great is that it is the file sizes are incredibly large in terms of the individual file size and the extensibleness of the arrays that can be used. You can increase the data pools. You know, you don't have to basically recreate them. You can add additional drives. It supports hot spares. You can do local and remote replication, and it'll only send the changed blocks. So this is just a quick overview of the architecture. So you'll have a VDEV, which is a virtual device, which is a cluster of disks. And this is typically done with software RAID. And there's a bunch of different flavors of that. And then you have multiple VDEVs to create a pool, a vPool, and then you can create your data sets from there. So a VDEV is, you know, it supports a number of variations of RAID. The big difference between traditional RAID, which you'd get like on a motherboard, a regular motherboard or a RAID controller, is that you've got the device level checking built in. Whereas typically with RAID, the RAID controller handles the data writing to and from the disks, and the operating system or the file system has no idea that there are multiple disks underneath, but that's not the case with ZFS. So the big differences here is RAID 0 is you just, you know, stripe multiple disks. So you write data to both disks, but if one disk fails, you lose all your data. The entire VDEV is lost. RAID 1 is a mirror. So you write the same data to multiple drives, wastes more space, but you have more redundancy in case a drive fails. RAID 5, where you have parity. So you'll write data to, say, two disks out of three, and then the third disk will have a checksum. It'll have a parity data so that if one of the disks ever failed, you could rebuild that disk using the data on the other two disks. And then RAID 6 has either two or three drives of parity data, so you can withstand multiple disks failing. There are some other versions of RAID that are supported. RAID 10, which is you combine a mirror and a stripe. There's a RAID 01. There's a couple other ones. These are the main flavors that you'll see. So just to keep in mind, RAID is not a backup. So because you're, even though you're adding redundancy and you're adding extra drives, and you know that's not a substitute for backing up your data. So definitely always make sure you do backups. And this is one of the things that I've looked at in terms of, if you did say a RAID 5 or a RAID 6, and one of your drives failed, and you need to rebuild that disk using the parity data off the other disks, because of how large these disks are getting and that you're in most spinning Rust, mechanical hard drives are still very limited in their throughput. It can take a very, very long time to what they call resilver, which is to recreate the data. So the larger your data sets are, the longer it'll take to resilver. The longer it takes to resilver, the more stress you put on the disks, the more stress you put on the disks, the more chance that something else fails. So just something to keep in mind. This is one of the reasons that when I built my TrueNAS server, I went with a RAID 10 because I wanted to use mirroring to minimize the amount of time it would take to resilver. And I am seeing all of the questions in chat, and I think we'll definitely get to those at the end. So yes, please hang on to your questions. Throw them in the chat. We'll park them and I'll go through them at the end. So I'm not going to get down the rabbit hole with ZFS here. There is a lot more to it. There's a lot of performance tuning you can do. It is very RAM intensive. So your read cache is typically stored in RAM for fast access. There's something called a level 2 ARC, a level 2 cache that you can create to write to an SSD. You can do some other things with your logging for synchronous and asynchronous writes, reads. Pool scrubbing to check your data, special classes, resilvering. Data deduplication means that when you have like one file stored multiple times, instead of storing multiple copies of that file, it's only going to store one. So it reduces the storage size, but it increases the compute complexity. So all things to look into if you really want to go down the rabbit hole here. Just something to be aware of. So this is my modest home lab. My TrueNAS server is the bottom one there. It's got 12 disks on it. So 10 of those are 14 terabyte Western Digitals. I shucked these out of Easy Store USB drives. They're effectively white label Western Digital red drives. And I also have two Western Digital purples for storing camera data. And those are special drives that are meant to be written to constantly. The server's a bit overpowered for what it is. I do run some other things on it, but it seems to work fairly well. It has a couple of SSDs in the back for the OS, and then everything else kind of runs in the front. And if I ever wanted to add more drives, I can just add another rack enclosure to add additional drives, and then connect with like an LSI card, something like that. So you can see in my array down at the bottom here, the 14 terabyte drives really only have about 12 terabytes of actual capacity, 12.7. They are mirrored, so there's a bunch of different mirrors. I did add additional drives to this mirror a while back, and I just extended the pool with that extra mirror. So it was very easy to do that. This is what the web dashboard looks like. So when you log into the website for your server, you get a nice overview. You get to see all your CPUs, all your cores, where they're at, temperature, how much RAM you're using. You'll see that the ZFS cache is using about half of the active memory. The more data that you have stored in your array, the more RAM it'll use. It will try to use up as much RAM as it can, just because if it can fill the arc with all of the things in memory that you're going to need to read to, it'll be really good performance. If you start missing, that's where you can go into like an L2 arc if you wanted to add like an SSD, for example. So I'll show you this all later. I just wanted to give you a quick overview. This is what the storage dashboard looks like. So I've got two pools. I've got a storage pool and a surveillance pool, top and bottom rows. And you can see the capacity. I've got about 64 terabytes of capacity. All the drives are good. They've been scrubbed. They scrub on a weekly basis, I believe on Sunday at 12 a.m. they scrub. And that's just checking the data, make sure that you're not having any bit rot, making sure that, you know, what ZFS expects the data to have is what it has. And then the bottom pool is for surveillance storage. So all my security cameras will store their recordings on there. And that's just I use Shinobi as a open source network video recorder. So I did do a quick test on virtualization because TrueNAS scale does support Linux virtualization via KVM. So I created a quick image and tried doing an install. I found a couple of little tweaks that were kind of annoying. It uses Spice for the web interface. So you can basically actively, get into the console for this. And I found it would take you out of focus, and I had to close and reopen it a lot. But otherwise it was pretty straightforward. You can use the hardware network card. You can create a bridge to share the interface. So if you don't want it to have its own IP address and you just want to expose a service, you can do that. You can customize the hardware. So when you create a virtual machine, you can see on the left here, I created one with two CPUs, two cores, 4 gigs of RAM, 64 gigabytes of drive space. You can just set it up in one of the pools wherever you want, and then the NIC that it's using, and then just I basically created a virtual CD-ROM to boot it from, which used the Ubuntu 2204 ISO. And then Spice is basically a web-based JavaScript client, which is what gives you the access on the right to do your installs and get into the direct video instead of just SSH. So this is kind of what you see with the virtualization. You can add and remove devices to the virtual machine, power it on and off, open up the display through Spice, open up a shell serial connection, take a look at logs. So nothing too crazy, but it definitely is nice to have the ability to separate those resources out to run them on the server if you've got the resources. Now for applications, it uses K3S, so it's a lightweight Kubernetes distribution. The applications are all deployed with Helm charts. There's a catalog created that's available. There's a couple of them I'll get into. So a lot of these applications are already available, and you just have to download the application through the UI, tweak a couple of things, and then deploy it. And there are, when you do enable applications, it's not enabled by default. It does create a data set called IX applications, which you can see below here. And that's where it stores all of the data that your containers are using. So that way, if your container dies, you can have persistent storage. So for applications, there's a couple different levels. You've got the enterprise level applications that IX Systems directly supports and maintains. There's not a lot of these, so I wouldn't worry about it for you. There is the official branch, which has the stuff that's been tested for stability and curated. So lots of good options there. You've got Plex, you've got Prometheus, Elastic, Home Assistant, Nextcloud, lots that you can go through. There is a community section, and these are apps that have had some basic functionality tested. It's curated by IX Systems, but they don't do full testing, and you've got a lot of different applications here. So you've got like Jellyfin, Redis, you can run a Jenkins server. Jellyfin is not on the official list. They are on the community list, and that's okay. Now, there's also a couple third-party catalogs. I started off by using this, TrueCharts. There's been a bit of drama with them and changes between versions. And this is sort of a use-it-your-own-risk sort of thing. So if you were just starting out with TrueNAS, I would stick to the official and community apps. Most of the stuff you're going to want is in there. But just be aware there are some third-party catalogs available. But if things change on the TrueNAS side and they don't stay up to date, there's been some discussions about data loss. So it is sort of a use trend risk. The only thing I'm really running on my server right now is my PyHole. So you can see on the left there, I'm running the TrueCharts version of PyHole. I just updated it yesterday. Basically just had to redeploy it, pick up the new image. All my data is there. You can see on the right side there, it's doing a great job blocking things. I basically just turn it off whenever I'm doing certain websites, and the rest of the time, like, go on my phone and try to go to an AdSense site, and it'll block it. So it's pretty great. And this is like accessible right off of my TrueNAS server. It's just on its own port. Very straightforward. So I'm going to briefly talk about TrueCommand. This gets into more of the enterprise stuff, or if you're going to cluster, if you're going to manage multiple TrueNAS systems and you want to sync data between them or control them, you can use TrueCommand to basically manage multiple TrueNAS servers, and that includes the enterprise, the core, which is the free BSD version, and TrueNAS Scale, and this is their own thing. So TrueNAS Core and Scale are free. There's community edition for all of these. The enterprise is basically through the IX Systems hardware. So just a brief thing on clustering. This is sort of, and I did a bit of research on this. GlusterFS is an open source software-based network-attached file system, and it can be deployed on top of ZFS to scale out, so you can have multiple file servers. The problem here is Gluster has been deprecated by Kubernetes in 1.25. I believe there's a maintenance issue there, and TrueNAS Scale, the next version, has removed the deprecated Gluster backend. And there's some problems with TrueCommand 3.0 not passing validation for clustering. So if you go to the documentation, it's kind of unclear what's happening with clustering on TrueNAS Scale. Now that's, if you wanted to run some kind of, large enterprise environment, I would just talk to IX Systems. There are definitely some options for transferring your data and kind of using multiple servers, but the future of TrueNAS clustering, as a built-in service is sort of unclear at the moment. SMB clustering kind of requires a couple different moving parts. This is what's upcoming in the next version. So we're on Cobia, I believe, right now. Dragonfish is the next one. So you can see you're going to have a larger arc size, an upgrade to OpenZFS, the file system, new drivers, because you can create a KVM virtual machine, and you can assign it a GPU if you wanted to. So some other things, immutable snapshots, better logging. So the maintenance with TrueNAS is actually really good. They're coming out with pre-release versions all the time. You can upgrade your server. If you want to try a beta version or a pre-release version, you can. If you want to wait for a full release, you can do that too. I did a little bit of digging on TrueNAS scale versus Unraid just to kind of understand the differences. So the license is one of the main things. So with TrueNAS, the core and scale, the community editions are they're free, they're open source. iXsystems sells their own hardware, their own kind of turnkey services. And they sell support services, so that's how they make money. But the community edition really doesn't have any licensing. From what I've looked at with Unraid, the company that makes it, Limetech, they've created their own Linux-based OS called Unraid OS, which you have to purchase a license for. They just announced a pricing change. They grandfathered everybody in from prior to this, but it was kind of, people kind of heard about this and there were some rumblings last month, and then they came out and announced it. TrueNAS is fully open source. Unraid uses, like I said, their own Unraid OS is proprietary. It's based on Linux and it uses a lot of Linux based programs. So, you know, the file system, protocols, all that stuff. Sorry?
It's a fork of Slackware.
There is a license. You have to purchase a license to use it. The file systems, ZFS is really the core of TrueNAS Scale. And to my knowledge, Unraid always used XFS, which is being deprecated, I believe, and ButterFS, but I read that they are bringing in ZFS. It's not quite there yet, but it's kind of in progress. And that's a great thing because ButterFS has a lot of good things, but it's not quite, it's not the best, like it's better on performance. It has the RAID write hole problem. RAID 5 and 6 aren't recommended on ButterFS. If you go and look up what the supportability is there, there's problems. So there's, you know, that's from a philosophical perspective, ZFS really does look to be superior. ButterFS works for a lot of different things. It's just, you know, personal preference. So I would do your homework on those if you're curious. For virtualization, they both look like they use KVM now. I believe Unraid previously used Xen. For containers, you've got K3S, you've got Kubernetes running the Docker containers on TrueNAS. Unraid seems to have a Docker manager, and hopefully John will talk about that a little bit more. I'm not exactly sure how the packages are created for that. Both of these have a really good community. There's a Discord for TrueNAS. There's a really good subreddit. There's a really good forum. So I don't really have a problem with it. I've never had issues getting help from people. There's also a bunch of other places you can go to get help on. Like there's, you've got the data hoarders on Reddit. You've got the TrueNAS subreddit. There's various forums. There's Serve the Home is a great place to ask for questions about these sort of things. And then Level One Text has a great forum as well. I'm sure John will talk about the support on Unraid, but apparently from what I've heard, it's a very active and very friendly community. I put some resources here and I will make sure that this is included so that if you need the links, you can. 45 Drives has done a great job with a lot of like tutorials and information and articles on ZFS. Level One Text has a couple really good videos and I'll get those as well. So if you really want to understand how to set up ZFS properly and then tune it, there's tons of resources out there and it's really easy to get, to get started with it. So one thing I've got here is I've got my old NAS, which is a Netgear Ready NAS Pro. It's, I think from 2010, it's pretty old, but it's a pretty good machine. It's got a full dual core Intel CPU. It's not an Atom. It's a full one. And I've upgraded the memory. It's got dual 1 gigabit NICs. Now it is possible to get TrueNAS running on this. You'll probably want to upgrade the BIOS and you'll have to get TrueNAS Scale installed. And that's going to need a VGA header, but I believe there is a VGA header on the board. So it shouldn't be too hard to get this running with TrueNAS. If someone's interested, it'll take 6 drives. It's a solid little machine. I just obviously have upgraded to something bigger, so I don't need it anymore. The OS that it came with is pretty ancient at this point. So I would definitely say if you're willing to tinker, this is definitely available. I have a survey, which I would love to get your feedback on the presentation, how you found things. I'm working on my public speaking, so I really do appreciate your feedback. There's a survey link, and so please give me your feedback. And if you are interested in winning that TrueNAS, or sorry, the ReadyNAS Pro, there's an option in the presentation there. So for questions, why don't we just go up the chat really quick, and then we can take some from the room. So your Alexander says, your issue with cloud backup is the cost and time to restore in case of something. TrueNAS can be used in replication mode. Yes, you absolutely can do that. So it does support rsync. It does support some common protocols. Anything that's S3 compatible, it will work with. So that's not necessarily just S3 for bucket storage. You can definitely use multiple protocols to sync your data. One of the great things with ZFS is that it has what's called snapshot mode. And so you can take a snapshot of your data at a certain point in time and transfer that to this offsite. If you colo your own server, put it in a bucket, whatever you want to do, you can do that and transfer the data. You can do like a ZFS send and just send that data. And then say a week later, you can do another snapshot and send, and it will only send the difference. And it's much faster in terms of, it doesn't have to validate every single item before it sends like rsync does. Rsync can be incredibly slow, but ZFS has its own tools built into the file system to handle that with a lot more efficiently. So yes, you can do cloud backup to your own thing, your own system. You can just go ZFS to ZFS, honestly. You can do cloud-based through to S3 buckets to Backblaze. And you are right. If you do something, it's usually very cheap for you to send your data to them, and it's very expensive to retrieve it if there's some kind of outage or data loss. So Lucas is asking, is it possible to get a friend to just run a NAS for you to sync with? You could definitely do that. If you both had a NAS and you wanted to synchronize folders between them, that's ZFS can do that. I think this is sort of what Gluster was designed to do as well, but that's being deprecated. But in terms of just setting up some kind of sharing network with ZFS pools, that's definitely doable. In terms of RAM, so Alexandra is saying, I'm only going to speak to TrueNAS because I don't know about Unraid. It says one gigabyte of RAM for every terabyte. It doesn't need that much, but the more data that it has in that's stored, the more RAM that it will want. And part of that is, as I said, the ARC, the adaptive read cache, is stored in RAM. So the more data you have to cache for reading, like so that it can find it fast, the more RAM it's going to take up. That can be offset by a couple of different things. You can do an L2 ARC where you can use an SSD to cache some of the reading indexing so that it can read that faster. The more RAM, the better is basically what it comes down to for performance, but it's not necessary because if it doesn't hit the cache data, it will go to the L2 cache. If it can't find it there, then it will go and find it from the disk. So performance will suffer, but you'll still be able to get your data. So we talked about Jellyfin and Plex. I mean, that's a whole other topic, but it supports both. I personally run Plex in my Proxmox cluster. It does work here. My only thing with both of those is that the indexing and caching tends to take up a lot of space. So just be aware that if you're going to run it on this machine, you need to have some space for the thumbnails and the indexes and that sort of thing. But it is definitely doable. Let's see. Alexandre saying a nice way and secure way to access your files from Android and iOS devices. So that's a good question. I would say a couple of people talked about Nextcloud, and Nextcloud is definitely supported. So that would be one way to do it. I personally would probably just run WireGuard or OpenVPN so to get onto your network and then just access a network share from there. If you want to go really basic, you can do that on Android. I'm not sure about iOS. There are applications that will let you get access to your files very easily. And Lucas says, what's the point of having RAID if you still have to back up anyway? Well, that's a whole other conversation. RAID is not a backup. And I've learned the hard way because I had one of my servers where the RAID controller, it didn't die, but it started to corrupt. And then it corrupted all the data it was writing. So backups are always a good idea because when you're writing two sets of corrupted data to disks, it doesn't matter how many disks you have in the RAID array. So I was lucky that I had backups.
Just to add to that? Said,
yes.
Consider where your backup is sourcing your data. A common idea is, oh, well, I'll just send everything to the RAID and then back up the RAID. I only have to put my backup in one place. Super easy until your RAID is the source of the problem. So backup from the source of creation, not from some secondary tier, because you reduce the number of hands that can corrupt that data.
Absolutely. Yep. And there's definitely ways to set up that to automate that to happen. But, you know, regular backups, just don't count on RAID because, yes, a drive might die. Like I said, you could have a drive die and you might be able to rebuild your array. But in the middle of resilvering, you might lose another drive or you might just corrupt all your data. So having backups, having snapshots, offsite backups, like, you know, if your basement floods or your house burns down, you know, offsite backups, definitely a good idea. And, you know, things like Backblaze are not that expensive for your, you know, critical files. Definitely something to keep in mind. It's all built into the TrueNAS to do it. So Tim had said backups ensure your data is safe, but doesn't enhance availability. For personal stuff, waiting a day to get your docs is not a big deal, but for a business, having many people wait a day to get their work done is a different story. Yeah. So there's, you know, there's things like Amazon Glacier where you can store your stuff very cheaply and recovery might take 12 to 48 hours, but it won't be as expensive to retrieve. Something like that. Oh, you guys, can you guys still hear me?
Yep, I can.
Okay, I just want to make sure it wasn't my internet reconnecting. So someone asked about Proxmox. Do you use ZFS with, I'm not sure what Lazo means. Oh, also use ZFS. Yes, I do. The OS drives, actually you can install Proxmox on ZFS by default. Hang on a second. Can Andrew's saying he can't hear me. I'm still showing up as lit. Okay, I think it's something in the room. Okay, I think it's the meeting room. Yeah, let me go back to the QR code. One second. I gotta find my presenter notes.
Yep. Okay, Jason, you hear us?
Yes, can you guys hear me now?
Yeah, sorry about that. We've been out for probably 2 minutes while my access point died.
Okay, wasn't sure what happened there. I wasn't sure if it was me. Okay, so other questions. We talked about saving data, backups. Learning. Alex is saying Proxmox, learning Proxmox because of the VMware mess. Don't even get me started on that. I had switched to Proxmox a year ago when Broadcom announced the acquisition. Go check my website, linuxtech.ca. I've got an article where I actually went through how to migrate all the data from VMware because my lab was running vSphere and I switched it all to Proxmox and converted all my VMs. So I've got an article on how to do that. And I definitely think it's worth looking at options. Thank you. So my website is linuxtech.ca. And then just search there for Proxmox and you'll find the articles on converting. Lucas is asking, what are the benefits of a NAS opposed to a computer with shared hard drives? So there's a lot of good questions there. If you've got your computer on with hard drives and you've got shares, if you turn your computer off for the night, no one else can access them. If you've got applications and other servers and you've got, you know, other people watching TV on different rooms and you turn off your computer, no one can get to those, right? You can basically turn a computer into a NAS as long as it's on all the time. Someone's asking, the chat link did not work for me. Oh, is that for the Google form? Okay, hang on one second. Let me get the link. I'm not sure why that's not working.
Oh yeah.
I'll give the full link to the survey. So survey link here. There you go. I'm not sure what happened there. It was probably a typo. Yeah. So, there's a lot of reasons to go with a dedicated server rather than just a computer with shared hard drives. Part of its performance, part of its, you know, having it centrally created on your network, You're not beholden to that one person who turns their machine off at the end of the night. It also lets you dedicate resources to running some of these applications, to having, like, if you've got five people in the house pulling from your computer is probably going to get pretty slow. And if you're trying to game or something like that while people are pulling from it, you might have a performance issue, or the, you know, speed might not be good. So there's just some examples for network attached storage versus a computer with shared hierarchy. And I ran that way for a long time. Backup is another good way, reason to use a NAS. You know, you can have those hard drives on your main PC, and for some reasons, some cases, you want the hard drives on your PC for performance. Like, for example, if you're doing games or you're doing a lot of processing on data structures locally, you may not want to be pulling all of that over the network, but backups might be a better idea. Or, you know, some data that you're not using all the time, you might need to offload it to the NAS instead of having it all on your one machine, because you can use cheaper hard drives for a NAS and keep the fast access for like NVMe drives, for example, on your PC. So Alex is asking, do I prefer Dell hardware? I like old Dell hardware. Personally, all of my servers are Dell. It's just what I got used to, and I like their management software. It's called iDRAC. So you can actually remote into the server with a separate, network interface and, manage, you know, the BIOS, power, you know, hardware, reset it, all that kind of stuff. It's pretty good. I know HP makes some decent stuff. Lenovo makes some decent stuff. There's a lot of places you can get used server hardware very cheap. So I wouldn't, you know, some people use Supermicro, like really anything will work. I just personally stuck to Dell because I wanted them all to be standardized. And Bob is saying, what's my power bill like with that rack? You know, it's not as bad as I thought it would be. I maybe pay 100, 120 bucks a month for power, and I leave everything on all the time. So, not too bad. It definitely keeps the house warm in the winter. So final question, what HBA with IT mode do you recommend? So if you get the newer Dell machines, you don't actually have to flash it to IT mode. There's usually a RAID controller in the newer Dell. Like I have the Dell PowerEdge R630 and R640s, and you can switch the RAID controller that's built in from RAID to HBA mode without having to flash. So really straightforward to do. And then you just basically assign the disks directly to TrueNAS, and then TrueNAS handles everything in terms of the pooling. For licenses, that might be a whole other conversation in terms of enterprise licenses. I haven't had to pay for a license for an iDRAC on my servers yet. And Eaton, I find Eaton pretty solid. I think Eaton owns CyberPower. APC was good for the longest time. I still like APC. I have a ton of APC in my house. But I was able to get a really good deal on the Eaton. So if you look at my rack, it's actually one UPS and then a separate extra battery for extra life. So if I go back, let me see if I can figure out how to do that. I can show you. If I go back, I think it's like slide home lab. Yeah. So you can see the bottom one here is the bottom thing is the UPS itself. And then the one on top of that, the Eaton, is just an extra battery that's plugged into it. So I actually can keep my stuff running for a bit longer. Then I have a power distribution unit, and it's a Dell 730XD, which is the actual TrueNAS server. And then on top of that, you can see 3 1U servers. Those are my Proxmox clusters. That's my Proxmox cluster. And then I've got some networking. The Proxmox clusters also have a bunch of drives in them running Ceph, which is a storage. That's a software-defined storage network. So that's extra. That's where I store the actual data for the virtual machines, and then all the backup data goes to TrueNAS. And yes, I like mostly Unify gear. It's been pretty good, and I have a pfSense firewall. Any other questions in the room? Okay. I can hear you guys. So I think
Yeah, so all of your drives for the TrueNAS are actually in the server, right? You don't have like a separate shelf of drives or something in there.
No, so if you look at that bottom server, it's got 12 3.5-inch bays at the front. Those are all completely full. 10 of those are 14 terabyte Western Digital Reds, effectively Reds, and two are just 8 terabyte Western Digital Purples for the surveillance. And there's two 2.5-inch slots in the back for SSDs. That's what's running the OS. Now, if I wanted to extend this and get more drives, I could get an LSI card, and then I can get another drive wrap bay enclosure with just drives in it, and I can attach them and just extend it that way. But obviously, I've run out of room in this mobile rack, so that'll be a next house project if I need more space. But I've got plenty of space right now, so I'm not too worried. I will just log into my NAS, and I can show you guys a couple things if you're curious. If there's anything you want to see, you let me know. So I'm going to switch. I'm going to move my – can you see my server now?
No.
Nope.
Okay, I need to share. Hang on, I'm going to just switch sharing my screen to TrueNAS.
Because you decided on these 10 terabyte drives, you're kind of stuck with 10 terabyte drives unless you want to either change everything or you want to expand to another shelf.
So one of the things with TrueNAS that's good and bad. So Unraid actually will take different drives of different sizes. So that's one advantage of it. The downside, I believe, with Unraid is that I believe you're limited to 30 drives total, 2 drives for parity, 28 drives for data. And that's like a hard limit. There's really no limit with TrueNAS. You can increase the, like, so for example, I've got these mirrors here. When I started this, I only had 3 of these in the pool. I had to put in 2 drives at a time to extend my pool, right? So this is the pool, right? This is the pool, and it's got multiple VDEVs in the pool. Yes, so as Bob is saying, if I'm striping mirrors, you would be able to upsize your drives 2 at a time. That's correct. So if I wanted to add more disks, I would need an LSI controller to get to another bay to physically connect more drives, and I would just put them in 2 at a time. I would mirror them, I would create a VDEV, and then I can add them to the pool.
So but you could you, like, the 10 terabyte drives and that are in a VDEV and replace them with 2 20 terabyte drives and then make a new VDEV that way?
So let's say I would, I had space and I added 2 20 terabyte drives. I can then mirror those, right? So I'll create a VDEV with 2 20 terabyte drives, and then I can add that VDEV to the pool, and it will give me effectively 20 terabytes of space.
Does that answer your question? No. My question was, like, can I take stuff out and then replace it with bigger drives somehow? And it sounds like the answer is no.
You can. Sorry. It's a bit tricky because, like, you'd have to remove drives. Like, you can actually export and disconnect the drives and remove them from the pool and then put in the new drives and then expand the pool. But you'd have to kind of like almost like evacuate those drives first, I believe.
Yeah.
Jason, could I take a crack at this? Because I was labbing this up a couple of months ago. Paul, if you have a VDEV that's a mirror of 2 10 terabyte drives, you can take out one of those 10 terabyte drives, replace it with a 20 terabyte drive, re-silver it, so effectively make the mirror again only at 10 terabytes. And once that's done, you can take out the other 10 terabyte drive, replace it with a 20 terabyte drive, let it re-silver, and then you can expand it to the full 20 terabytes of both drives.
Yep, that's right.
Also, please never build a 20 terabyte day one.
Say that again?
Please never build a RAID 1 that consists of 2 20 terabyte drives.
Bad idea.
Not turn out well. Yeah. The number of blocks and the failure rates, if you have one drive fail, you're rebuilding.
Yeah.
No, I'm not.
Go ahead.
Presenter speak first.
So with ZFS, like I would never want to do that with a traditional RAID 1, because there is a lot of chance that something gets flipped, like a bit gets flipped in transit. The thing with the way ZFS works, even with drives of that size, you know, it's constantly checking to make sure the data is correct. Now, yes, you're correct that like if you had two 20 terabyte drives in a RAID 1 and one of those drives fails, you know, bad times for all. And that's a lot of data to resilver. And that's when, you know, if you go to that screen that I'll go back to that. Well, I can't right now, but that stat that I graph that I had, the amount of data it takes to resilver when you're really going at like, you know, yeah, I think it's 200 operations a second. It'll take you a long time to resilver. So smaller drives is better. Yes, you can remove VDEVs as well. So that's what I was saying, is that if you could add the, you could take the drives out of the VDEV and then put in the new drives and then create, add them to the pool and expand, that's another way to do it. So yeah, both ways can work. So is there anything you guys want to see? Like I can show you the applications here. So I've got Pi-hole running. If I go to Discover Apps, I've got two catalogs here. So I've got their original catalog for TrueNAS, and I've got a third party one. And so like if you want like say Nextcloud, for example, should be available. Let's see what's available. Oh, I actually have to go to Discover Apps. Sorry. Yeah, so there's Nextcloud on the TrueNAS catalog. I'm just gonna install it. I'm gonna see what it'll do.
Can you zoom in?
Yeah. Sure. Let me see if I can do that. Just have to figure out how.
Can I ask something even more disgusting? Is there any way light mode, burn all around.
This is the default, but there's got to be a way.
Nobody does.
There it is. Theme is IX dark. Top right settings.
Thank you.
Theme is IX dark. No, under GUI settings.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Let's try. High contrast. Maybe that's a little easier for people to see. Oops, I got to go back in, I guess. High contrast. Save. Okay, is that a little better?
Yep.
Okay, so let me go back to apps and discover apps. I was just looking for Nextcloud. So Nextcloud's here. It's in TrueNAS catalog. Install. So what you're getting here is you're getting all of the options within the Helm chart that are configurable. So I'm going to leave most of these the same. I'm going to leave it on my system. I'm going to leave all my stuff here. Throw a FFmpeg on there. Why not? And I'm just going to leave pretty much everything the same here. I don't know if I need to mess with any of the storage, but I'm going to just try it and see if it works. I haven't tested this, by the way. And this is going to go and download the chart. It's going to go and pull the images. Once this is ready, I'll show you how it deploys. So give this a second to refresh. There it is. So it's deploying. And if I go in here, I think it's a bit weird because of this. You can see like, it's actually like creating the Kubernetes event. So it's creating a Postgres database. It's downloading the images, it's setting up a replica set. This is all Kubernetes stuff that it's doing here. And it'll take a bit of time to deploy, and then we'll see if it actually works. Paul, did you see that email from Colin? Because he actually set up a TrueNAS server if people wanted to play around a little bit.
I did not see that email.
Let me see if I can find that. And I think he's just set this up temporarily. Let me just see if I can find it, because he actually set up a server. Colin, unfortunately, had some work things happen, and the bat signal was lit, so he is busy. But he did set up this server, and I'll put it in the chat, that you guys can try playing around with. And it's just username admin. So brand new TrueNAS server if you guys want to poke around. And I think he's just going to image it when it's done, so you can have a look if you want. So let me see if I can refresh this. There's usually an option to auto-refresh this, but I can't see it because of the sizing. So let's see if that's doing the job now. It's still deploying. So it's still working on stuff. It's pulling images now. So that's doing that. Just the reporting, just to show you this, you can see the CPU usage, temperatures, your system load. One thing I really like looking at is your ZFS stats. So this is kind of shows you when you're pulling data off of it, you can see the events, how much data you're pulling. You can see that I've got so much memory on this machine, there's no misses in the cache. And that's where if you started seeing misses, you'd want to either increase the RAM or increase, add a L2 arc to give you some more caching. And then you can see the hit rates, the arc size, which is basically as much RAM as it can use right now, what the demand is, get all kinds of good stats. The dashboard, you can kind of go in to any of that kind of stuff and see what you're using. So like your storage pools, you can go in and see what your disk usage is like, what your IO is like, your network IO, all that kind of stuff. And it breaks it down by disk as well. There's a lot of options here. So Alexandra mentioned Synology. It's cheaper than Synology hardware. It is. Synology is very much a turnkey solution. So you buy it and you use their stuff and you don't have to fiddle with it too much. One of the things I found with Synology, I believe, is that they use a lot of their software has licenses. So if you wanted to run your own like network storage for cameras, for example, there's a license for that. And they're starting with their higher end models. I believe they're forcing you to use their drives, which are just, you know, rebranded Western Digital or Seagate, but you have to buy their drives. Otherwise it flicks a warning light on and that causes problems. So you can read up on that. I think Lawrence Systems had a video or two on that, but Synology, that's one thing I really don't like about them. I started with the Netgear one and it was good for a long time, but when you like to roll your own stuff, having the freedom to do this is nice. Any other questions?
I think let's switch over to John. Make sure that he has enough time for them. Right. He's got a good one. I don't know. Thank you, Jason.
Okay. So, awesome presentation, Jason. I haven't looked much into TrueNAS before. What I did see looked complicated, and I was looking for something that I could just do a few things with, and that's, to be honest, why I went with Unraid to start. I also had some really good friends who were using it and were really happy with it, so... you mentioned the licensing. This is what it was when I got it, and it still is at the moment. You just have a single license. So $60 gets you 6 drives. $90 gives you 12, or unlimited for $129. I got the $90 one and justified it because I was saving that on the hardware I was looking at getting otherwise, and I could just use a machine I already had. So the format of my presentation is just going to kind of be a show and tell. I didn't prepare any slides. I do have a few demos I want to try to show. So what you do is you would start a trial, which I've done for this box behind me, and then you download and write the operating system to a flash drive, and that's what you supported way of running this. It does seem like you can run this on one of your drives, but they really don't seem to officially support that. So I've got another USB stick here, already provisioned. Stick that in this box, and I'll turn it on. And let's see if I can switch over the input. There we go. Is that sharing?
Yep.
Might be a bit small. I won't be able to do much about that. Not much to see here other than just a booting and...
The fact that you showed a boot BIOS is pretty impressive to start with. So whatever happens after this...
Yeah, I wanted to justify having this HDMI capture tool. So, oh, is this... Oh, there it goes.
Oh,
good font size too.
I got this little guy here capturing.
Oh, but we can't see your video now.
Oh, right. I thought I had it on there too.
Paul's not gonna love that. The text got smaller.
Oh. So yeah, here's this box with the Unraid running on the USB, and I just have Ethernet bridged to my system here, and HDMI through this little guy for $30 going into my machine here. So I'll try to set that back up so you can see the box. Okay, so it's booted up. And it looks like it's got an IP address. It says, I'm not sure if it's readable, but it says 246.39, which is NATed through my phone. I look here. EN7, there it is. So grab that IP and open it in my browser. And I'll need to switch to sharing my browser. Okay. Am I still visible?
Yeah, we can see on Raid.
Good stuff. And so I've done a little bit of preparation so that I could do some demos.
Can we ask you to make it bigger?
You definitely can. So let's make this 1, 2, 3, 4.
For us in the room, is that good for people online?
Might need to go down one. It looks like this is so I can see everything on the screen. Is that still okay in the room?
Nice.
And how is it online?
Yeah.
Okay, so all I've done mostly last night is add one of my drives to the Parity. Show you what that looks like. If I haven't started the array yet, so this is what it looks like. I can go down and put up to 30 drives. As Jason said, there currently is a hard limit. They are changing how this works so that there will not be a limit to the number of arrays, but I believe each array will still be 30. But for my use case, that's okay. You can also have pool devices like a cache. And unlike most RAID, they call it Unraid, they're doing a lot more in software and a little bit more, it seems like, rolled their own just using Linux tooling. So instead of having a RAID where you're sharing a logical disk over several physical disks, they're just letting you throw disks at it. And then it uses something like OverlayFS. I'm not sure if it actually is OverlayFS. It might be one of the alternatives to give you one view into the data. So you can go and make different shares. Oh, I should start the array. Right now I've assigned some disks. Could have done up to 2 Parity drives and then, just up to 30 of these. Still have a solid state I'm not going to assign just yet. But let me go ahead and start the array. And I'm going to bring a shell up. Oop, that's same zoom. And I'm going to look at what happens on mount. So now I get disk 1, disk 2, user, and user 0. And that is showing these two disks that I put in. List. And is the font size still okay in this pop-up? I can see that, is it showing me which disks? Oh, it doesn't really show, but SDB is my disk 1 and SDD is my disk 2. They're just currently, I think I chose XFS for these because I was hoping to, just wanted something simple to start off with. And if I were to go in to user, so let's go to mount, user, I see some folders. I can just make a new folder. So I'll go to my share. I can see those same folders showing up here. And I could
set permissions for who can access these shares. I can set up users. But let's just make something new. So I'm going to make something called movies and look back at my shares. And I have movies. I can say that I want to have this exported, which means you can have a Samba share on it. I can say if it's public, or I can set up a user to access it. I'll set up as a Time Machine share, which I guess is just for Mac. And then you can see this allocation method, high water, fill up, and most free. I only really have looked at high water. These are kind of different ways of deciding how you are going to split your data across the disks. So because they're not merging all these drives into one logical drive, they're just kind of letting you merge them using a file overlay FS. It needs to decide how it's going to write the files across the drives. So on this movies folder, I could say that I want to allow any of the disks. The default is all, but I could select a smaller portion of my disks that I want my movies to be on. And then what it's going to do is it's going to start at the front, write until it gets to, I believe the default is 50%. Once that first drive is 50%, it just starts writing the next drive. And it can partition based on the settings here. It can prefer to only split certain directory levels. And you can say, yeah, don't split directories. And so unlike a RAID, you could pull one of these drives later and just take it somewhere else, and it's just gonna work. So for recovery, I find I have a bit more peace of mind with this. I don't have to really understand how a RAID works. These are just some drives. They're all in there together, and they just have my files. And Unraid is just kind of giving me a nice view into the data, letting me decide how it splits the stuff across. That's kind of, yeah, one of the interesting things about Unraid. Also, you can have a cache drive that's usually you'd want to use a solid state or something, that you can have it write your data first to this cache drive. This cache drive is also part of this overlay FS where all your files are kind of, they look like they're in one place. Sorry, I didn't actually show that yet. So it's probably easier if I demonstrate it. So if I go into movies, I touch a file. See, there it is. I guess I have A in there as well. And now if I go to see what's in mount, I can see disk one is actually where that file lives. Under user zero, I should see the same file. I do. And then under user, I see the same file. This can be a little bit confusing at first, but quick look, I think I found in the forums, people kind of talk about this. User zero is just a way to skip a cache. So that's going to go, it's going to go to just the disks. And then user is going to look at the cache first and then look at your disks. And when you write to user, it's going to use the logic that I showed you in the shares to decide where your data actually lives. But generally, you don't really want to use the disk mounts to actually access the data unless you really care that, my movie downloaded to disk two and I really want to put it to disk one. You could just move it to disk one and none of your other users are going to even know anything happened because you have this one view into it. Question, Paul?
So there was a question early in the chat about running off a USB flash drive and it's going to kill your flash drive.
That's a great comment. And yes, if you're going to write a lot of data to your flash drive, it will absolutely kill your flash drive. You can have multiple flash drives in and it could fail over to the second one, but the wisdom is don't write a lot to the flash drive and that's not going to be a problem. You're just booting off this drive, and then your Slackware OS is a, I forget the word for it, but it's not, I don't know if I call it immutable, but it's read-write, but as soon as you reboot, it's all restored. It's not persistent. So when you want to persist something, you want to persist it into your array. which is where you saw there's one of the default folders is app data. And you'll find this is where you're going to have, if you install Jellyfin, Plex, all these things, they'll default to getting a folder in app data. You can also, you know, make your own folders, obviously. But yeah, you shouldn't be writing logs. Like, you can tell it to keep logs on the USB, but they do give you a warning. This isn't a great thing because you're going to put a lot of stress on that USB. But when I looked into it, it didn't seem to be a big concern, at least the way I'm running it. I'm just basically reading it when I reboot. I don't reboot very often, like every couple months. I've only had it for about 4 months now, and I've had some nights where I'm doing a lot of settings, and I may have rebooted like 3 times in a night, but generally my uptime is months. So I don't think I'm putting much stress on the USB. But I did invest in a nicer USB for that reason, because that is one of these points of failure. However, if I lose the USB, I do have backups, and I could just, it's just flashing the USB, and that's just my RAID configuration. Almost everything is persisted to your array, if that makes sense.
So, if you launch a brand new USB, you can just replace that one and you have all the settings.
Yep. So if I go here to, I think on the dashboard, I haven't done it in a bit. You can automate it, and I haven't done that yet. There is a button that was like pretty, nope, that's log out. There's a button somewhere that lets you.
Your OBS is covering your mouse.
Oh, yeah. Up in the top here somewhere, I thought it was here. Maybe it's in settings. I'm not sure where it is, but there's a place where you can just click. It gives you a tarball of your, or maybe it's an ISO. It's something you can just write it back using their tool, or you could just use DD to write this. It must be an ISO, because I think you can just DD this file back to any USB. One thing you will have to do once you get to it, once you switch to a different USB, is transfer your license, because the way they do licensing, it's tied to the hardware ID of your USB. So once you boot up on the next USB, it'll say, hey, you don't have a license here, but you can transfer it over. Any other questions in the room or chat?
So I think when you go back to that screen where you say you have your movies folder,
yeah,
and you can say which discs they go on, I think I don't understand what's going on here. So can you choose just like one disc for your movies folder?
And now your movies will only ever go to disc one.
And then, so if disc one dies, you lose all your movies?
No, and you don't even lose access to them, which is something I was surprised by. I thought that if my disc one died, and I wanted to save as much money as possible, so I went and got $130 10 terabyte drives that were heavily used by someone off eBay, but they did have some kind of, they said they had some kind of, anyway, they were well used. And I've lost one already in this 4 months I've been using it, which is a cool learning experience. It will virtualize the data while it rebuilds your next drive. So we had quickly ordered a new 10 terabyte when we saw we're getting smart errors. And we just went to here and we went to all of our shares and said, hey, you know what? In our case, it was disk 4. We went to all of our shares and said, hey, don't put anything more on disk 4. We're going to keep using it. We have a couple shows on it. But we don't want to write anything more to it until we get a replacement. And we got the replacement. We go to the array, and we shut down the array. I'm not doing that right this second. But you can remove. Well, actually, I might as well. I'm not doing anything with this array right now. So I'm going to stop the array as if disk one was or disk two was failed. One thing you'll notice, and Jason mentioned, I can have different size drives as long as my parity is the largest. So the question was, yeah, what happens to your data? So disk one or disk two can fail, but not both. or the parity drive can fail, and I can recover all of the data by kind of calculating which bit is on or off. So parity is just going to be, I don't know if this is exactly what's happening, but I believe it's just odd or even, and it's just going to take all the bits from every drive in the array and say, okay, 1, 1, then this is 0, this is 1, 0, this is 1, and it can just recompute it by finding if the total of the bits needs to be even or odd. It can also do, when it's doing a repair, I believe it can also look at features of the file system to see if something, which one is right or wrong.
So does that mean if I say movies can only be on disk one, you're not storing all the data on disk one?
If you say it's only on disk one, yeah, it'll only store those movies on disk one in your array. Your parity is always calculating even or odd on all the bits in your array. So you could have up to 30 drives, and it will calculate based on those 30 drives. So now if we lose disk one out of 2 or 30, it will start for every byte it tries to virtualize on disk one, it's going to be reading all of the other drives to get you that data. So I was able to, once I took out the drive and I was starting to build, to rebuild the drive that I lost, I noticed that it said virtualized. And like, oh, that's interesting. And I went and looked at what's on the drive, and I was able to browse and like, okay. And I found a video on it, and I started playing it, and it just played. And it seemed to be no problem. I'm not sure if RAID does that as well. But yeah, while I was reconstructing a lost drive, I was able to just view the media.
So... as a person who has given a talk on, LVM and dealt with disks and so forth, this deeply unsettles me. But that being said, okay, so we're dealing with file systems, and we're using an overlay to kind of unify the file systems. And this leads me to a question with access controls and, like, the way Linux sort of models and thinks about, like, hey, I have a network share, and here's who can access and how they can access it and so forth. And when I've used things, like when I use my QNAP or when I've used other NAS-type devices, they're like, the file system is just here for our use. All of this stuff is up in user space. We're managing all these controls, and mm-hmm. we're really, like, virtualizing and fronting it so that you have different flexibilities, different patterns of access and control. So my question is does Unraid really, like, dig in, like, you're running a plain Samba share, or does it provide new abstractions for how services can be offered or configured? Does that make sense?
No.
Like, is it just purely, like, writing a Samba config file, or is it augmenting, like, how Samba or, say, how FTP behaves? Because, there are places where you get access controls, right, and they apply across multiple protocols.
So from what I've seen so far is it's using, like, your Etsy password file for users when I'm using Samba shares. It's probably using something open source and just installed. Like, from what I've seen, the stack isn't too complicated. It's Nginx, it's PHP, it's something like OverlayFS. I haven't looked into under the hood on everything, but it seems like they're just using technology that's already there and then kind of gluing it together. I wouldn't say from what I've seen so far that it's as enterprise-ready as maybe TrueNAS, but for a home lab, for me, it seems good. If there's a weakness in, like, file security, because I haven't heard of anything like this. Like, I think they're just using Linux file security. So if I say something's owned by a certain user, with OverlayFS, it should just use that permission on the it's like /user or /0. You think that there's an issue with that, or
no? I'm not saying there's an issue. I'm trying to understand, like, how much they're separate, they're wrapping like existing commands and basically, you know, just making it easier to use existing things.
That's the feeling I get.
Like providing kind of a new abstraction saying, you know, we're going to provide a more flexibility or a different experience than what the core utilities are.
The feeling I've gotten so far, and this is a feeling I've been 4 months in and I haven't looked too much under the hood, is that they're putting nice UIs over well-known software. So, for example, I just want to talk about the Docker. They just seem to be using just plain Docker, like not even Docker Compose, which I wish they did. But if you need to troubleshoot some application you're running, it's just Docker PS. You can Docker inspect, Docker logs, all the ways you work with Docker normally are available in the shell, even though you deployed it using their nicer UI.
There's a bunch of questions in the chat. Should I read them? Or?
I'm just going to demo a couple things first.
Okay.
Because I've not, I have about 10 minutes.
Sure. Then we'll get to the questions.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll try to keep it short. So if anyone's interested in this, I whipped this up last night. I just, using Canvas to kind of show how Parity kind of works. So if SDA turn off the negative here. So let's say SDA is Unraid, SDB is TrueNAS, SDC is our Tux, and SDD is the KWLog logo. And this canvas, if you can see this box around, is your Parity drive. This is how I think it's nice to visualize how it works. All of these can fit in there. Tux, let's say that's a 2 terabyte, just kind of fits exactly. And if we ever lost a drive, all of this data is stored as kind of a negative of what it was. So if we lose this KWLog logo, but we have Tux, TrueNAS, and Unraid, and we can flip all those bits, then we can have the negative of that image, and then to just get the data, we just flip all of them back, and then we have our data back. I don't know if that visualization is helpful at all, and if anyone wants to play with this, it's at jskw.dev/unread, and I'll toss that in the chat. It was kind of fun to play with Canvas and JavaScript. And I do want to show a couple of deploying apps, and then we can get to some more questions. Unless there's any questions specifically about things I've already done or talked about. Probably better to
wait.
Okay, so my array did stop, I think. Oh, it's very upset because I'm in one of the folders and it's trying to be safe. As soon as I get out of the folder, yep, now it's shut down. Okay, so I've run into that a couple times. Just being in CD'd into one of these folders, will stop you from bringing down the RAID. Okay, so in this view, if a device had failed, we could just come in here and put in a different device, and I guess I can do that right now. Let's say I try to put in this, it'll say wrong. This is device is disabled, contents emulated. So I could still read the data. And if this was a large enough disk, it would offer, let's see if it's even let me bring the array up. Yeah, the replacement disk must be as big or bigger than the original. Makes sense. So if I did have a disk the same size, I could have brought that up. But let's put back in. Yeah?
So since this is a file system level, it feels to me like the disk should just be driven by utilization of the original disk rather than like the overall size.
Could you?
So if I've got 100 megs on a 1 gigabyte disk, I only need 100 megabytes of storage.
There's no guarantees where that 100 megabytes is on the disk, and the way Unraid treats disks is just it does not treat them as data on a disk. Because it has to do parity, because it's working with parity, it is dealing with every single bit on that disk. It doesn't, In some ways, it does understand the file system, but for the way it does reconstruction, it doesn't care. Okay. It could be a not even a real file system. It'll recover it based on the parity, but it can't deal with a smaller disk, I guess, or even if the data fits. What it can do with a larger disk, I believe, I haven't tried recovering to a larger disk, it'll recover all of those bits of the file system to the first, you know, so many bits of that bigger disk, and then it's up to you to go up and extend your file system. So it'll recover it, it'll only have the space it used to have, but once you finish recovering, you can go in and resize your partition, take up the rest of the space.
So it'd be like you would DD the original
disk. Exactly, yes. So in some ways, I can see some people that maybe understand RAID more are not a fan of this. Because I didn't understand a little bit of RAID and I got into this, like, oh, it's not what I expected. But in some ways, it's kind of pleasantly nice. It's like, oh, it's just, it's weirdly simple in some ways. And for my use case, it's been really nice. I still do plan to try TrueNAS, but if this is for someone, I'd say if you want to set up something that is not going to need a lot of maintenance and someone who's not very tech savvy might want to drive it, I'd probably lean into this one. My husband is definitely tech savvy, and he's also a software developer, but he's never really got into like DevOps-y infrastructure stuff, but he's been very happy with this, where he just comes in, goes to Docker, and installs updates. It's like one button. We have it set with Telegram, so it sends a message to both of us when we need Docker updates, or if something's misconfigured, there's some plugins that can give you alerts based on, like, if you're logging to your thumb drive. It'll say, hey, this is a terrible idea. You're going to kill your thumb drive. Change this. but there's a lot of nice user-friendly things. And it's still fairly powerful because it's just Linux under the hood. It's Nginx. It's things that I understand, which is kind of nice. I do want to put the time in and learn RAID and get into, dig into TrueNAS. But for something that I understand and just runs, Unraid's been fairly nice. Okay, I still want to do a couple demos before I get to a couple questions. I can't stay much into 9 o'clock, so apologize if I don't get to all of them. Let me go ahead and start the array. I just want to show some of the nice features of Unraid. Similar to TrueNAS, it's just kind of a one click to start an app, and then you have a little bit of configuring. So it's not one click, but let's have a look at their app store. Almost everything here will be run in Docker. One of the few things I got that wasn't was their package manager nerd tools. So if you want any command line programs, if you're familiar with Slackware, it doesn't, at least last time I used it, doesn't have a package manager, but they have this nerd tools, which lets you kind of like click on and off different packages. They have tmux, they have tcp dump, vim, just kind of some basics. But if you want to install applications, you're probably going to want to use a Docker image. So let's look at YouTube DL. And I think I'm just going to take the defaults. I believe this is one I tried yesterday. I'm going to give it my movies folder for audio downloads and for video. And if I subscribe to things, let's put them all into movies. I hit apply. And then it's just pulling the images. If I have a look in the terminal, run a Docker PS, Docker, oops, nothing's there yet. While that's going, though, we could find a Creative Commons movie. So coffee run from, what's it, Creative Commons? Yeah, from Blender. Grab this URL. Okay, so it's downloaded this YouTube DL, and it even shows you, yeah, the exact command it's using to run it. And like I said earlier, it's more just a kind of a friendly UI on top of existing technologies like Docker. And now when I go to the Docker tab, I have a nice image. This is a part of just the Docker tags. They just have a URL to an image. They can have a nice image here. I could go in here and click on web UI. Here we are at Docker DL. I can pass it a... Let's just for the sake of time, make it a bit smaller. Download that. And then we'll grab another app. Jellyfin. I guess there's no official Jellyfin here either. Lots of community ones. So I think this is the one I use at home. They're all probably using the same image. Actually, yeah, I'm using MediaServer. MediaServer is one of the popular creators. Don't forget to show variables. Okay. Oh, it's I haven't seen this before. Okay, this is new. I can choose release or nightly. Let's just go with latest. And I want to use my movies folder. And one nice thing that's probably true of most NASs, you don't have to decide one or the other. You can mount the movies folder to lots of different applications. I could have it in Nextcloud, Jellyfin, Plex, and just use what I need. At home, I use both Jellyfin and Plex. And okay, sorry about that. Am I back?
Yes, you are. I hear you.
Yeah, we can hear you, but we can't see anything.
Oh, yeah, I guess I have to share again. I need a presenter token again.
Oh, great job.
I think I only one now. Yeah, okay. Window 2, I think. No, it's window 1. Window 1. Oh, actually, it was window 2. Okay, is that sharing?
Yeah.
I do have to jet in a few more minutes, but... okay, so we have this movie, and maybe I won't get into Jellyfin, but we can try to watch it. Oh, is that from... Yeah, let's turn that down. So what I wanted to do is find this movie. I'm going to have to restart the shell here. Shell isn't loading. I may have to re-sign in to the Unraid. Okay, maybe we'll. I was hoping to demo pulling the SATA cable while I'm watching something, but I don't think I have time, so maybe we should just try to get to a few more questions before I wrap up.
I did have one question about that. He thought it was the original might have been deprecated or not maintained.
So I don't know what the material one that I'm using. I believe it's a wraparound YouTube DL. The official YouTube DL is definitely maintained. It was taken down a few times, but it was restored because I believe it's not illegal. I forget the reason, but yeah, it was restored. It's still on GitHub on the official site. I remember the last time I went down, I went and cloned a fork of it just so I had a copy. There are uses of YouTube DL that are probably not legal, but there are plenty of legal reasons to have it.
Yeah. Or something substantially non-invalid.
Yeah. But also, a lot of creators like Waffle Masses, what's the guy's name? Leonard French, he uses it to like download even his own videos to go and like react, to like look through. Yeah, like it's perfectly fine to use, I think. In some cases, I don't know. Anyway, this is off topic. Any Unraid questions before I have to run? I'm going to say I got like less than 5 minutes.
Yeah,
sorry about that.
Stop the raid every time you want to make some changes out of these, make out of these.
Yes, so you'll have a little bit of downtime. So right now you can only have one array. You can have lots of pools for like the cache drives, but the array that has the parity is currently, you can only have the one. They will, in an upcoming... Hello?
Yep.
Okay.
Hear you now.
Sorry about that. Yeah, my hotspot kept dying. So maybe a couple more questions?
Jason's... Oh, can you upgrade Unraid? Do you have to re-image a USB stick, or can you do it dynamically through the web interface?
Yeah, it requires a restart, I believe, but yeah, you can just update through the web interface, and then it will update your USB, which is another write to it, but the writes are very infrequent, so I would say it's probably pretty safe.
Question with Docker, does it support Gmail?
Yes. So I have my Zigbee stick passed through. I guess that's the only hardware I've done.
Are you a fellow home assistant person?
Yep.
Welcome.
But yeah, everything you can pretty much do in Docker works. I have had very good experience with transcoding as well. There's an official NVIDIA driver for Docker that it takes advantage of, where it can share the CUDA cores across all the images. You can tell each of your, I tell Jellyfin and Plex both, here's my GPU, I'm using a 1080 Ti, and they can both use it for hardware transcoding, which is mostly if I want to down, like bring the quality down so I can stream outside of the house. And that works well, and there's a nice dashboard that shows you what's using your GPU. And even when I'm transcoding, I think I'm only sitting around 150 watts. Maybe was I haven't seen it go much higher than 150. Maybe I'm not usually transcoding. I'm probably usually watching its source. I'm sure TrueNet has this as well, but I have a driver for my UPS. It's always showing me how much time I would have when when the power's lost. It can shut it down after, like, when it gets to, like, I think I have it set to like 30 minutes until the power is gone, then it'll shut down. And it's always showing me my draw right on the dashboard.
Another question. Is it x86 only, or does it support ARM?
I haven't seen anything about ARM. I would guess it might be x86 only. But I don't know.
With the shares, with how you show that you can have it assigned to just one drive,
mm-hmm.
but then add a second one. If you add a second one and then remove the first one, does it actually move the files, or does it leave it on the first drive?
I haven't tried that. I believe so. While they're on the first drive, they will still be accessible in the. So just because you're saying so, that is more about where it's going to write to. I don't believe it'll automatically start moving stuff around. You might need to do that. Although they do have a cron job that may do that. I know the cron job is mostly for, I think, bringing stuff from the cache into the long-time storage array. But that cron job might also move stuff around if they're in the wrong place. It definitely shows you a warning if files are not... I've turned off so that disk 4 that was going bad. I turned that off to write. And then, it didn't move anything off it. And I had it like that for a couple days. But I had a warning saying, hey, you've got data on more than just your assigned drives. So I guess if I would have looked into that, I could have then gone and moved some of those files over so that would turn green instead of orange. I think I mentioned this before, the cron job is kind of nice. It's just a shell script. You can look in if you needed to modify it or add an extra thing. It's really straightforward for me. Like, I've dealt with bash scripts. They're pretty easy to maintain. Nginx I'm pretty comfortable with. The main entry point to the system, if you want to know,
I'm not sure. You can certainly remove both parity drives. I'm not sure if it's the same parity on each one. I haven't got that. I don't have enough disks to really justify having two parity things.
I'm guessing the parity is happening via MD. If they're wrapping, right? Because if I'm happening on the block level. So I bet you, if you read through the MD manual, you'll probably find the parity modes that are available. I'm only going to bet one wingy, though.
There's
a Linux server.
Yes, I need recently, and I don't have a key. Just beg. You can do write five, which is basically the same thing. Like,
how far do
you have?
And
disks and
non-parity. Well, no, you probably can do RAID 6 where you have two parities.
I don't think that they are using them. They're using something else.
Well,
I think removing the disk in MD is a continuing operation, makes a lot of writes. And I didn't see here details like this from MD because this is an important thing.
What's that?
When they come on the list, then it goes back in. It didn't like start to recreate.
That's right, because it June did not be changed.
Yeah,
but if I had if I lost power, it will force it to a parity check, and it will do as many reads. When I lost the drive, I could see that it was reading. I could see the read going up like twice this file size I was reading, and it would be like exactly the same amount on the other drives.
So it's scanning the parity and the...
Yeah, I mean, the rolling parity, I can see, like, you know, 1 gigabyte on each drive, writ red, and 1 gigabyte on the parity, writ. So it definitely, like, lines up, if that makes sense.
But if you have a terminal, you can check.
No, this is a guess, by the way. I'm not saying for sure, but just listening to the symptoms, it sounds like there's an overlay file system and a quiet use of TV in the background. Was there the recovery of that lock level device recovery? It's very weird.
Oh, you're going quiet.
No, you don't
want to
know.
I usually don't, but I just want to walk too far with this tower.
Yeah. This time of night, you might be okay.
Yeah, you'll be fine, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, yeah, thanks.
Then I think we used to use the parking lot, the Unix users group, when you...
over in DC.
Yeah.
I was hoping
oh, no,
to
that was
BlackBerry. I was going to get into...
That was from the lot was owned by BlackBerry.
I was using XFS DB to use the inode and find the blocks. I was going to use XXD to show the hex on the parity drive and on the drive and see if I could find something that appeared. I used Shred on all my drives to make sure they're all zeros so that I could hopefully find something in a parity. But not enough time.
Ah.
Well, that was awesome. So, thank you for coming, everybody. Thank you, John. Thank you, Jason. I don't know if they can still hear us. My laptop maybe has its microphone on. So if people can hear us, thank you for attending. If you would like to come for dinner, we're going over to Molly Blue's in Plaza 2. I don't know which plaza number.
There's not a lot of Molly Blooms around.
No, we've got a lot of Molly Blooms on
the street.
Just for who knows, who would like to, who would come along? John, we're going to get you out of here. All right, we'll see you in the next person.
Yep. All right, you're coming along with us.
You're looking really sober. You sure?
All right. So in that case, thank you everybody for coming. And now most of us will keep moving forward.
What?
John, you're all good?
Yeah.
All right.
I forgot the box.
This is the box for the presentation.
Have a good night.
Next week, the Kings of Waterloo.
Okay.
Yeah, there's only one left.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, you can go to the one in Kitchener, but I wouldn't wait for them to open it up.
They will not.
Yeah, you're really hungry.
Yeah.
Do you remember? You were there last month, the one with the weird Y table?
Yeah.
That one.
Y table.
Or, it's not a Y.
I wasn't
it's
there, so
a
Y.
Yeah, it is a Y table.
It's sort of a Y, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, right, I think
yeah, it was a Y table.
Steve's
yeah.
suggestion of see if they'll open up the top for us.
Yeah.
Was a good one, because that would be better.
Yeah, yes. I often do that places, so.
Yeah. And when there's eight to ten of us, it feels like it's enough,
yeah.
but maybe they will do it.
Yeah. I mean, it's a what it is they, you know, every place is concerned with their staffing.
Yeah.
And, like, making sure that they have a good ratio of staffing to customers to be serviced, and if, like, for just going up there and need, like, three service runs, you know, orders, deliveries,
yeah.
drinks, you know, then they're fine. But if we're going to be high maintenance, then it causes them a lot of issues.
Yeah.
Honestly, last month when they seated me at that odd table, I didn't think anything of it at the time because I thought it might actually be better because then there's sort of a hub at the side.
I did kind of like the shape for doing that.
Yeah, it's just that the volume of the music was loud enough that
I guess you have to ask them first, like, go upstairs. Like, I think downstairs there will be, like...
Yeah, and it's probably best to ask them now.
Yeah,
ask because they'll...
Assuming that they actually remember that we're coming.
Yeah.
Because at the Kitchener one, whenever I showed up, that was the first one there. They're like, yeah, we don't have any record of your group.
Oh, I had minions there for a long time.
And even at the Waterloo one, there was a bit of confusion at first.
Thank you for listening to the Kitchener-Waterloo Linux User Group audio podcast. Our monthly meetings are free of charge and open to all, so please join us either online or in person. We meet on the first non-holiday Monday of each month. Please visit kwlug.org for upcoming topics, location directions, video recordings of our meetings, and more. In addition to attending a meeting, you can participate in the KWLUG community by joining our email discussion list, by offering to present a topic, or by spreading the word about our podcasts and videos. Thanks to the many organizations that have donated resources to make KWLUG possible. IndieServe Networks for web hosting and email lists, as well as CCJ Clearline before them, DataCity for hosting our video conferencing server, Archive.org for hosting videos and audio recordings, and the University of Waterloo, the Working Center, TRIOS, and other organizations that have hosted in-person meeting space over the years. Until next time, goodbye world.